We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16. Texts 1 to 3, is that right? Texts 1 to 3? It's quite a... We spend our whole time just reading the purport. It's a 5-page purport. Okay. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Abhayam Sattvasam Chudir Jnana Yoga Vyavyastiti Danam Damas Jagnas Cha Swaryayas Tapa Arjavam Ahimsa Satyam Akrodas Tyaga Shantira Paishunam Daya Puteshva Lolutvam Mordavam Rir Achapalam Teja Kshama Driti Saucham Adraho nati manita bhavanti sampadam daivim abhijatasya bharata. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, fearlessness, purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of sacrifice, study of the Vedas, austerity, simplicity, non-violence, truthfulness, freedom from anger, renunciation, tranquility, aversion to fault finding, compassion for all living entities, freedom from covetousness, gentleness, modesty, steady determination, vigor, forgiveness, fortitude, cleanliness, and freedom from envy and from the passion for honor. These transcendental qualities of Sanat Bharata belong to godly men endowed with divine nature. Purport, in the beginning of the 15th chapter, the banyan tree of this material world was explained. The extra roots coming out of it were compared to the activities of the living entities, some auspicious, some inauspicious. In the 9th chapter also, the devas are godly and the asuras, the ungodly or demons, were explained. Now, according to Vedic rites, activities in the mode of goodness are considered auspicious, progress on the path of liberation. And such activities are known as Daivi Prakriti, transcendental by nature. Those who are on the path, those who are situated in the transcendental nature, make progress on the path of liberation. For those who are acting in the modes of passion, ignorance, on the other hand, there is no possibility of liberation. Either they will have to remain in this material world as human beings, or they will descend among the species of animals or even lower life forms. In this 16th chapter, the Lord explains both the transcendental nature and its attendant qualities and the demoniac nature and its qualities. He also explains the advantages and disadvantages of these qualities. The word abhijatasya, in reference to one born of transcendental qualities or godly tendencies, is very significant. To beget a child in a godly atmosphere is known in the Vedic scriptures as garbhadan samskara. If the parents want a child in the godly qualities, they should follow the 10 principles recommended for the social life of the human beings. In Bhagavad Gita, we have studied also before that sex life for beginning a good child is Krishna himself. Sex is not condemned, provided the process is used in Krishna consciousness. Those who are in Krishna consciousness at least should not beget children like cats and dogs, but should beget them so that they may become Krishna conscious after birth. That should be the advantage of children born of a father and mother absorbed in Krishna consciousness. The social institution known as Varnashram Dharma, the institution dividing society into 4 divisions of social life and 4 occupational divisions or castes, is not meant to divide human society according to birth. Such divisions are in terms of educational qualifications. They are to keep the society in a state of peace and prosperity. The qualities mentioned herein are explained as transcendental qualities meant for making a person progress in spiritual understanding so that he can get liberated from the material world. In the Vanashram institution, the sannyasi, or the person in the renounced order of life, is considered to be the head or the spiritual master of all the social statuses and orders. A Brahmin is considered to be the spiritual master of the three other sections of a society, namely the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, and the Shudras. But a sannyasi who is on top of this institution is considered to be the spiritual master of the Brahmins also. For a sannyasi, the first qualification should be fearlessness, because the sannyasi has to be alone without any support or guidance or guarantee of support. He has to simply depend on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one thinks, after I leave my connections, who will protect me, he should not accept the renounced order of life. One must be fully convinced that Krishna, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his localized aspect as Paramatma, is always within, and that he is seeing everything, and he always knows what one intends to do. One must thus have firm conviction that Krishna or Paramatma will take care of his soul surrendered to him. I shall never be alone, one should think. Even if I live in the darkest regions of a forest, I shall be accompanied by Krishna, and he shall give me all protection. That conviction is called abhayam, fearlessness. This state of mind is necessary for a person in the renounced order of life. Then he has to purify his existence. There are so many rules and regulations he followed in the renounced order of life. Most important of all, a sannyasi is strictly forbidden to have any intimate relationship with a woman. He is even forbidden to talk with a woman in a secluded place. Lord Chaitanya was an ideal sannyasi. And when he was at Puri, his feminine devotees could not even come near to offer their respects. They were advised to bow down from a distant place. This is not a sign of hatred for women as a class. It is a stricture imposed on the sannyasi not to have close connections with women. One has to follow the rules and regulations of a particular status of life in order to purify his existence. For a sannyasi, intimate relations with a woman and possession of wealth for sense gratification are strictly forbidden. The ideal sannyasi was Lord Chaitanya himself, and we learn from his life that he was very strict in regard to women. Although he is considered to be the most liberal incarnation of Godhead, accepting the most fallen conditioned souls, he strictly followed the rules and regulations of sannyas life, order of life, in connection with association with women. One of his personal associates, namely Chodha Haridas, was associated with Lord Chaitanya, along with his other confidential personal associates. But somehow or another, this Chodha Haridas looked lustfully on a young woman, and Lord Chaitanya was so strict that he at once rejected him from the society of his personal associates. Lord Chaitanya said, for a sannyasi, or anyone who is aspiring to get out of the clutches of material nature and trying to elevate himself to the spiritual nature and go back home, back to Godhead, for him, looking towards material possessions and women for sense gratification, not even enjoying them, but just looking toward them with such propensity, is so condemned that he had better commit suicide before experiencing such illicit desires. So these are the processes for purification. The next item is jnana, yoga, vyavasthiti, being engaged in the cultivation of knowledge. Sannyas life is meant for distributing knowledge to the householders and others who have forgotten their real life of spiritual advancement. A sannyasi is supposed to beg from door to door for his livelihood. This does not mean that he is a beggar. Humility is also one of the qualifications of a transcendentally situated person, and out of sheer humility, the sannyasi goes from door to door, not exactly for the purpose of begging, but to see the householders and awaken them to Krishna consciousness. This is the duty of a sannyasi. If he is actually advanced and so ordered by his spiritual master, he should preach Krishna consciousness with logic and understanding, And if one is not so advanced, he should not accept the renounced order of life. But even if one has accepted the renounced order of life without sufficient knowledge, he should engage himself fully in hearing from a bona fide spiritual master to cultivate knowledge. Sannyasi, or one in the renounced order of life, must be situated in fearlessness, sattva samshudira, shuddhi, purity, and jnana yoga, knowledge. The next item is charity. Charity is meant for the householders. The householders should earn a livelihood by an honorable means and spend 50% of their income to propagate Krishna consciousness all over the world. Thus, a householder should keep giving charity to institutional societies that are engaged in that way. Charity should be given to the right receiver. There are different kinds of charity, as will be explained later on. Charity in the modes of goodness, passion, ignorance. Charity in the mode of goodness is recommended by the scriptures, but charity in the modes of passion, ignorance is not recommended because it is simply a waste of money. Charity should be given only to propagate Krishna consciousness all over the world. That is charity in the mode of goodness. As far as Dhamma and self-control is concerned, it is not only meant for the higher orders of religious society, it is especially meant for the householder. Although he has a wife, a householder should not use his senses for sex life unnecessarily. There are restrictions for the householders, even in sex life, which should only be engaged for the propagation of children. If one does not require children, he should not enjoy sex with his wife. Modern society enjoys sex life with contraceptive methods or more abominable methods to avoid the responsibility of children. This is not in the transcendental quality, but is demoniac. If anyone, even if he is a householder, wants to make progress in spiritual life, he must control his sex life and not beget children without the proper purpose of serving Krishna. If he is able to beget children who will be in Krishna consciousness, one can produce hundreds of children. Without this capacity, one should not indulge only for sense pleasure. Sacrifice is another item to be performed by the householders, because sacrifices require a large amount of money. Those in the other orders of life, namely brahmacharya, vanaprastha, and sannyas, have no money. They live by begging. So performance of different types of sacrifice is meant for the householders. They should perform Agnihotra sacrifice as enjoined in the Vedic literature. But such sacrifices at the present moment are very expensive, and it is not possible for any householder to perform them. The best sacrifice recommended in this age is called Sankirtan Jaga. The Sankirtan Jaga, the chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is the best and most inexpensive sacrifice. Everyone can adopt it and derive benefit. So these three items, namely charity, sense control, and performance of sacrifice, are meant for the householder. Then swadhyaya, Vedic study, is meant for the brahmacharya, or the student life. Brahmacharis should have no connection with women. They should follow a life of celibacy and engage the mind in the study of Vedic literature, the cultivation of spiritual knowledge. This is called swadhyaya. Tapas, or austerity, is especially meant for the retired life. One should not remain a householder throughout his whole life. He must always remember that there are four divisions of life: brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. So after grihastha householder life, one should retire. If one lives for 100 years, he should spend 25 years in student life, 25 years in householder life, 25 years, 25 in retired life, and 25 in the renounced order of life. These are the regulations of the Vedic religious discipline. A man retired from household life may practice austerities of the body, mind, and tongue. This is tapasya. The entire Vanashram Dharma society is meant for tapasya. Without tapasya or austerity, no human being can get liberation. The theory that there is no need for austerity in life, that one can go on speculating everything will be nice, is recommended neither in the Vedic literature nor in Bhagavad Gita. Such theories are manufactured by show bottle spiritualists who are trying to gather more followers. If there are restrictions and rules and regulations, people will not become attracted. Therefore, those who want followers in the name of religion, just to have a show only, don't restrict their lives, the lives of their students, nor their own lives. But that method is not approved by the Vedas. As far as the brahminical quality of simplicity is concerned, not only should a particular order of life follow this principle, but every member, be he in the brahmachari ashram, grihastha ashram, vanaprastha ashram, or sannyasa ashram, one should be very simple and straightforward. Ahimsa means not arresting the progressive life of any living entity. One should not think that since the spirit spark is never killed, even after the killing of the body, there is no harm in killing animals for sense gratification. People are now addicted to eating animals, in spite of having an ample supply of grains, fruits, and milk. There is no necessity for animal killing. This injunction is for everyone. When there is no alternative, one may kill an animal, but it should be offered in sacrifice. At any rate, when there is an ample food supply for humanity, persons who are desiring to make advances in spiritual realization should not commit violence to animals. Real ahimsa means not checking anyone's progressive life. The animals are also making progress in their evolutionary life by transmigrating from one category of animal life to another. If a particular animal is killed, then its progress is checked. If an animal is staying in a particular body for so many days or so many years and is untimely killed, then he has to come back again in that form of life to complete the remaining days in order to be promoted to another species of life. So their progress should not be checked simply to satisfy one's palate. That is called ahimsa. Satyam, this means that one should not distort the truth for some personal interest. In Vedic literature, there are some difficult passages, but the meaning or the purpose should be learned from a bona fide spiritual master. That is the process for understanding the Vedas. Shruti means that one should hear from the authority. One should not construe some interpretation for his personal interest. There are so many commentaries on Bhagavad Gita that misinterpret the original text. The real import of the word should be presented, and that should be learned from a bona fide spiritual master. A krodha means to check anger. Even if there is provocation, one should be tolerant. For once one becomes angry, his whole body becomes polluted. Anger is a product of the mode of passion and lust, so one who is transcendentally situated should check himself from anger. Paishunam means that one should not find fault with others or correct them unnecessarily. Of course, to call a thief is not fault-finding, but to call an honest person a thief is very much offensive for one who is making advances in spiritual life. Re means that one should be very modest and must not perform some act which is abominable. Achapalam, determination, means that one should not be agitated or frustrated in some attempt. There may be failure in some attempt, but one should not be sorry for that. He should make progress with patience and determination. The word tejas used here is meant for kshatriyas. The kshatriyas should always be very strong, be able to give protection to the weak. They should not pose themselves as nonviolent. If not violence is required, they must exhibit it. For a person who is able to curb down his enemy may, under certain conditions, show forgiveness. He may excuse minor offenses. Saucha means cleanliness, not only in mind and body, but also one's dealings also. It is especially meant for the mercantile people who should not deal in the black market. Nati manita, not expecting honor, applies to the shudras, the worker class, who are considered, according to the Vedic injunctions, to be the lowest of the four classes. They should not be puffed up with unnecessary prestige or honor, and should remain in their own status. It is the duty of the Shudras to offer respect to the higher class for the upkeep of the social order. All these 26 qualifications mentioned are transcendental qualities. They should be cultivated according to the different statuses of social and occupational order. The purport is that even though material conditions are miserable, if these qualities are developed by practice by all classes of men, then gradually it's possible to rise to the highest platform of transcendental realization. So the verses again. Anyone remember all the purport? Abhayam satvasam shudhir jnana yoga vyavyastiti danam dhamma sajagnascha svariyaya taparjavam ahimsa satvam akrodas jaya shantir paishanam daya bhuteshva lolutvam mordavan riya chapalam tejo shamatriti shocham adho natimanita avanti sampadam daivim abhijatasya Bharata. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, fearlessness, purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of sacrifice, study of the Vedas, austerity, simplicity, non-violence, truthfulness, freedom from anger, renunciation, tranquility, aversion to fault-finding, compassion for all living entities, freedom from covetousness, gentleness, modesty, steady determination, vigor, forgiveness, fortitude, cleanliness, and freedom from envy and from the passion for honor. These transcendental qualities, O son of Bharata, belong to godly men endowed with divine nature. Any questions? Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaya Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane. Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Bicharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskyadiyade. I'll just say a few words before the question. Fortitude, that means, it comes from the word fort. You know what a fort is? A fort? Fort. Do you know what a fort is? Like where soldiers are in a fort. So fort means being fixed and with strength. Being able to be resistant to any kind of disturbance. Strong. If you take your vitamins every day, you develop fortitude. Here it mentions many different qualities. And of course, Prabhupada spends most of the purport on the first paragraph, or the first two lines, which are dealing with the vana and ashram system, specifically the qualities for the brahmachari, swadhyaya, self-study. In other words, unless we know that we're a soul and we practice the activities of a soul, for instance, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions the activities of the austerity of the body, Deva, Dvija, Guru, Pragya, Pujanam, Socham, Arjavam, Brahmacharyam, Ahimsam, Cha, Shariram, Tap, Uchite. So Deva, Dvija, the Devas are Krishna, as well as all the demigods. Deva, Guru, and those who are spiritual teachers, Pragya, the persons who are learned, Deva, Dvija, Guru, Pragya, Pujanam. Worship. That these persons should be worshipped. Pujanam, Saucham. And we should practice cleanliness. Arjavam, and simplicity. Brahmacharya, celibacy. Ahimsa, nonviolence. Sharira, Tap, Uchite. So there are certain things we can do with this body that will help us advance. Our minds are a little bit more subtle, and therefore it's more difficult to deal with the mind. We just don't sit around thinking what we want to think all the time. The mind has its own way of thinking. But the body, we certainly have more control over. just, it's not that. We would try to come to the temple and the body just wouldn't do it. I was really willing, but my body just is like trying to fight a hurricane. Maybe someone, if they're crippled and they, but even then, someone can take them to the temple. So generally we don't complain, my body wouldn't bring me to the temple. It was my mind that wouldn't bring me to the temple. But still, in order to be clean, for instance, therefore we have to utilize our intelligence and our determination to do it. The intelligence and mind have to direct the hands to go and wash the hands. The soul has to agree to it. Or even celibacy or nonviolence. But these are activities which are relatively easier for the soul to perform with the body than to try to simply remain, as it says, even the words. Anyone know what the austerity words are? I'll give the Sanskrit and you can fill in the rest. Anuvegam karam vakya satya priya hitam chayat swaraya vyasanam chayva vangmaya tapu uchite. So you got anuvegam. What is anuvega? Not to disturb the minds of others. Agitate. Anuvega karam vakyam, by one's words. Satya, what does satya mean? Yeah. Priya. Yeah, pleasing. Hitam. Hita. Nana shastra vicharanai kanipano sadharma samstapako lokanam hitakarino. So, lokanam hitakarino. Hita? What were the six Goswamis doing for the people in general? What were they trying to do? Disturb them, agitate them. What does hita mean? Hita, hito, beneficial. Trying to, satya priya hitam chayat, svarayayat. What's that? Yes. Vyasanam chaiva vangmana tapu uchita. So, words are a little bit more difficult to be able to speak every word so that it's beneficial, it's according to the scripture, it's also pleasing to people, it doesn't agitate their minds, and it's beneficial, and it follows, not so easy. A little bit more difficult, but possible. We can have some of those qualities. We can strive for them. But what about the mind? Anyone know the austerities of the mind? Yes. What's that? Satisfaction. Yeah. Manak prasadam. That's satisfaction. Prasadam. So you have to give prasad to your mind too. Manak prasadam saumyatvam. What is saumyatvam? Saumyatvam. Equanimity. Manak prasada saumyatvam monam. What is that? Yes. Most of our devotees are practicing monam right now. Monam. Atma vinigraha. What does that mean? Atma vinigraha. Control of the self. Self-control. Monam atma bhava samshudira. Samshudira. Shuddha. Shuddhi. Anyone know Shuddha? Shuddha sattva. Yes, pure. Yeah. And some sudhir, some complete, completely pure. Bhava sam sudhir ityeta tvo manasam uchate. So there are different qualities, and we have to practice them. And the more we advance, then we go from at least, sometimes devotees, they say, or some people say, well, I'm not clean, I'm not austere, I don't practice nonviolence, but within my mind, I'm a great devotee. So generally speaking, first we have to practice things that are observable, that can be easily understood that this person is acting in the mode of goodness. And then we may work on the more subtle things. But if we can't work on the gross things, pretending that we're actually dealing with the subtle things is just usually pretension. If we can see what's going on right before us, how can we claim we're seeing what's going on with Krishna and the gopis in the bushes of Vrindavan? We can't even see what's before our face. We can't, but we're claiming we're seeing what's going on in Goloka Vrindavan, which is many light years away. Therefore, it starts here with Swarayaya. We have to hear about our actual self and what our actual duties are. So that's brahmachari life. Brahmachari, guru kule, vasan danta guru arhitam, achavan dasavan nicho, surida, guru surida saurida. That there are qualities that the brahmacharis, they develop by the process of hearing. Like they like their teacher. They become favorable. Not that he's the teacher, why is he the teacher? I should be the teacher. This is not really the way things should be. We must rearrange the world. No, he likes the teacher. He's saurida, he has good feelings. And he's vasan, he's sense and mind controlled. He lives in the ashram with the other students. So there's a life of brahmacharya that helps us come to the platform of celibacy. Unless we know we're spiritual souls and that our actual purpose is to uncover our spiritual identity, then naturally we just want to use our life for material enjoyment. Because what else is there? Why should I sacrifice my life and at the end I just die and that's it? So unless I understand I'm a soul, then I'll simply be interested in serving my senses. Unfortunately, if we only serve our senses, we'll never realize that we're actually a soul. Therefore, we have to learn what is the value of brahmacharya and how to perform it by self-study. And self-study also includes how to surrender to persons who are giving us knowledge. Then one can become a householder if it's not possible to immediately go to the renouncer of life. Just like Krishna and Balaram, or Krishna and Sudama, they went into the forest to collect wood. Krishna didn't say, well, I'm God, why should I collect wood? He didn't say, let the wood come here. Told the trees to come here and fall into pieces. No, he went out with Sudama and they collected the wood. Although it was quite austere. There was a big devastation of rain and thunder, and they were cold and they had to take shelter in a cave. And then the spiritual master had to come and rescue them. Therefore, they went through Krishna himself showed the process by which one can learn sense, mind control, how to become a servant so that one can advance to the higher realms of life. And of course, both Krishna and even Sudama, they became householders. But they practice sense and mind control, Dhamma. Krishna gave in charity. How many cows did Krishna give in charity every day from each one of his palaces in Dwarka? Does anyone know? 13,024. And they weren't ordinary cows. They had golden horns and silver hooves. And they had a grappa and they had a firstborn calf. Every day, some days it says, it doesn't say everything. But just imagine that. And how many palaces did Krishna have? Yes, so multiply that by 13,000 and 24. How many is that? Anyways, we should know these things in case you need, in case you appear in Krishna's pastimes and you need a cow, then you'll know where to go. Get one. So there's helpful information. Definitely you wouldn't go to one of Krishna's palaces and say, sorry, we're out of cows. So Krishna showed charity. He showed sense and mind control even as a householder. How many children did Krishna have? For each one of his wives? Yes. Yes, more than that actually. Yeah, he had some girls. How many girls did he have? Yes, so how many is that then? Yeah. So he had 160,080 boys plus 16,108 girls. I mean, that's a good family. And how many, according to Shukadeva Goswami, how many tutors did the Yadu dynasty require to educate the Yadu dynasty children? 32 million. So you can imagine, you know, there's not much unemployment in Krishna's pastimes. Quite inconceivable. But he showed, how did Krishna show that he was sense and mind control having so many children? How, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, does this show Krishna's sense and mind control? Yes. Yes, certainly that was, he got up in time for Mangalarti. He didn't have Mangalarti. Before, when the rooster or the cocks would crow, he'd get up. His wife didn't. Well, it said that Krishna only had sex life with his wives in order to create children. And that was it. Although his wives, the queens of Dwarka, were always trying to inspire him and allure him, but he was never allured. So Bhishma Dev said, I'm known as a great brahmachari, but if I was in his position, I would have a lot of trouble. So Krishna is the greatest brahmachari, because he was being criticized by Shishupal. And charity, sense of mind, and sacrifice. Did Krishna perform any sacrifices? Well, you just mentioned, every morning he get up, and all 16,000 times a day he performed Agnihotra. So who can compete with Krishna's Agnihotras? And that's a lot of fire sacrifices. In other words, if one can practice becoming a brahmachari, then he can actually live as a proper householder. Otherwise, it's very difficult to be sense and mind controlled, given charity, and perform sacrifice. Then, after becoming a good householder, a qualified householder, then one can also perform austerity, tapas. At least in the Vedic culture, the austerity was quite severe. You'd retire, but you wouldn't retire to Hawaii. The Vanaprasas didn't retire to Hawaii or to the Canary Islands and went skiing every day in Krishna consciousness. No, they went to the forest. And if you ever go to a forest, it's not very pleasant to live in a forest. Especially, I don't know if they had mosquitoes in the forest back then. Could you imagine going to the forest without any mosquito repellent and living there? And not only that, but you can't, there's no refrigerator, there's no convenience store, there's no shopping market to go to. You have to eat what's ever available. So they have to eat the bark of tree. Have you ever eaten the bark of a tree? You have to chew it very well. Probably they didn't eat a whole lot. You just take one little piece of bark and spend the rest of the day chewing it. Barks of trees. Of course, I'm sure they knew which barks to eat. They didn't just eat, you know, any old bark. Berries, roots, leaves. And then they sleep on the ground. They have to endure the extremes of weather. They'd go out when it was raining. Luckily, I don't think in the Veda culture there was much snow. That was true, they wouldn't last very long, probably. In any case, there was extremes of heat and cold and rain, and they had to endure it without any kind of umbrella, or they'd actually stand out there in the rain. And then they wouldn't shave, they wouldn't clean their teeth. So if you ever went for a long period of time without shaving, it's very inconvenient. And if you never clean your teeth, their teeth will probably give you some trouble after some time. They wouldn't cut their nails. So it was quite austere, and they practiced that. But the result was, the idea behind it was not simply to torture themselves, but so that they spend their time thinking about Krishna. They didn't cut their hair or their nails or their beard, and they endured greater, so that they could actually fix their mind upon Krishna. And they practiced because they knew, here I am, I'm at least 50 years old, and what's going to happen after you're 50 years old in the future? What's one thing that's going to happen to everyone who's at least 50 years old? What's that? They're going to die, yeah. Don't take my word for it. But they're going to die. And at the time of death, then the temperature increases greatly. Suddenly, you get a temperature of 106, 107, whatever it is in centigrade. And then it drops down immediately to freezing. So you have to tolerate it. Not that it's hot. You know, you're trying to think about Krishna, and then you start thinking about a fan or an air conditioner. And if you can tolerate the heat, when it drops down to cold, you have to tolerate the cold also, which is generally considered to be even more intolerable. So that takes a lot of practice. So the vanaprasa is a practicing to fixing the mind upon Krishna in such a way as that they're able to endure the extreme conditions at the time of death, so they remain undisturbed. Vihaya kamiyak sarvam pumam sharitinis priha niramo nirahankara sa shanti madigachati. That one who gives up all desires of sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who is devoid of the false ego, and doesn't devoid of the tendency to try to be the proprietor of others, he alone can attain real peace. That is the way of spiritual and godly life, after attaining which a man is not bewildered. Being so situated, even at the hour of death, one can enter into the kingdom of God. And then, of course, abhayam, if one is factually conscious of Krishna, deeply absorbed in Krishna consciousness, one will not be afraid of leaving the body. Like Dhruva Maharaj, when death came to take him, the Vaikuntha airplane came at the same time, and death paid his obeisances to Dhruva, and Dhruva stepped on the head of death and entered into the Vaikuntha airplane. So not only he wasn't afraid of death, but death was a servant of Dhruva Maharaj. And in order to achieve that fearlessness, there has to be cultivation of spiritual knowledge and purity. Otherwise, it's not possible to become fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness and therefore become completely fearless, even at the hour of death. So I'll stop there before. Any questions? Yes. Maybe he was lusty for the rice. Yeah, Prabhupada says different stories in different places. Just to be, there are different versions of the story. But generally, we take the most authoritative story, one in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that he had simply gone on behalf of Bhagavan Acharya to beg some rice from an old lady, Madhavi, who was one of Lord Chaitanya's 3½, she was the half confidential associate, along with Ramananda Roy, Swarup Damodar, and Sikhi Nahidi, his her brother. So it says he didn't glance lustily at her, and sometimes it says it did. But in any case, somehow or another, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu found some discrepancy in his behavior as an example for us to follow, but it's not exactly consistently told in the same way. But here it's being told as more or less as an instructive element. And even if it's told slightly differently in another book, that's really is an instructive element. So the accuracy of exactly what happened may remain mysterious, but it's the instruction that's important. Yes. Okay. Anyone? Take prasadam. No, we have to try to cultivate the qualities according to our own personal level of advancement. Therefore, it's broken up into householder life, dhamma, dhamma, and jaga. For the sannyasis, there's abhayam sattva samshudhira jnana yoga. Now, for the sannyasis, it mentions, for the brahmacharis, it mentions cultivation, spiritual knowledge. For the householders, there is sense and mind control, there's charity and austerity, and dhanam, dhammas, giving in charity and sacrifice, and sense of mind control. For the vanaprasthas, there is tapasya, austerity. And for the sannyasis, there is fearlessness, cultivation, spiritual knowledge, and purification of one's existence. So we have to see what is more. Generally, for most of us, we're striving to study these books and to learn sense and mind control and being charitable and performing some sacrifice, mainly the Sankirtan Jaga. And from that, we hope to develop the ability for austerity and come to the platform of actually becoming fearlessness and learning in the scriptures and being pure in our existence. Yes. Yeah. No, whatever, you're supposed to give 50% of your income as a householder. But that means, you know, exactly, you give as much as possible in the practical sense. That's also charity. Yeah. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.